Live Creative Now, episode 96.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hello, hello. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, and author of The Creative Sandbox Way, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, which is a lie, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind or anything in between, no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. It's how you change your life, and it's how you change the world. This week, I have a conversation for you that I actually recorded last fall. I know, so long ago. Can't believe so much time has passed. I actually have a bunch of these kinds of conversations in the can. I think I have six more after this one that I recorded, all recorded way back last fall, which I am dying to get edited so I can share them with you so that I can start having some more conversations and sharing them with you, because I have been itching to record more conversations. Not interviews, mind you. I am specifically not referring to them as interviews because it's really conversations I'm interested in doing. I want to bounce ideas around with other people so that it isn't always just me sharing my own ideas with you. I really like sharing my own ideas with you. I really like doing these monologues, you know, where it's me and the microphone and you. But I also have just been itching to bring other people on and have juicy, rich conversations. But I am not going to allow myself to record any new conversations until all the ones that are in the can are edited and published. And as I said, I think there's six of them still in there, so it's going to be a while. But that said, if there is someone that you have been thinking to yourself, gosh, you know, I would really love to be a fly on the wall with while Melissa and this person are, you know, having coffee together, having a conversation together, then drop me a line. Head over to livecreativenow.com and leave, you know, send me a message, send me an email, or send me a, you know, you can actually leave me a voicemail over there. There's a way for you to do that. It's very, very simple, right through your computer. And I am super open to suggestions. Now, there's no guarantees that I will actually be able to have a conversation with the person that you are thinking of. And that person could actually even be you, if you think that a conversation with you and me would be rich, would be a rich thing for other people to listen to. And again, I'm not looking for interview subjects. I am looking for rich, real conversations. But if you have ideas, let me know. Anyway, this episode is a conversation with Alessandra Wall. Alessandra is a San Diego psychologist and life coach. She helps people who expect more from life get past blah and thrive. And as you will hear in our conversation, she and I actually do very similar things. We just approach it from kind of a different angle. And where I talk about living a full color life, she talks about thriving. It's really the same thing. We just use different terminology. But Alessandra does not like the title life coach. And in fact, that came up very early in our conversation. So why did I, a creativity instigator, talk to a psychologist and life coach? Well, I just told you that we do very similar things. We just come at it from a very different perspective. But from a kind of surface perspective, what the heck does our conversation have to do with living a full color creative life? Well, have a listen, because I think it will become clear. What I wanted to ask you first, Alessandra, is if we were to meet at a party, how would you introduce yourself? What would you say?
Are we meeting at a party and I am talking professionally, or am I talking as just one person to another?
Oh, you get to decide.
Oh, well.
Let's say as one person to another.
Just one person to another. This is very interesting, because I'd ask you all about you, because that's what I do.
Mm.
But if you ask me about me, I would probably say that I live in San Diego. I would probably, because it's a big question in the States, talk about what I do. And then I'd say I'm a psychologist and a life coach, but I'm having an identity crisis with the life coach thing right now. I don't like the title at all. It makes me cringe. I was writing the other day on a blog post that when I say life coach, I nearly want to say it like a sneeze. I'm a life coach.
I have my own feelings about that word, that term as well. Tell me, what is the discomfort there?
Well, there are a couple things. One is there are too many of us. But that's not true, because that's true. I mean, I say that, but the old neighborhood where I used to have my practice, you could throw a stone and hit five psychologists at once. So clearly that's not it. I find the term to be extremely vague. I find it to not fully encompass what I do. And I find that most people have no idea what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I struggle when I use it, because it doesn't define what I do. And then the other thing I think is just, it's intellectual snobism, right? As a psychologist. And this was a huge piece of me transitioning and accepting that this is what I wanted to do, the life coaching. As a psychologist, it's nearly like a heresy. Because all the degrees and the work that had to be done to achieve the title of Dr. Alessandra Wall, I'm kind of not throwing that aside, but nearly saying, well, that's not good enough. I don't want to do that anymore. Way more interested in this life coaching thing. So,
wow, there's a lot that intrigues me about that. Tell me about your decision to start doing life coaching, having built up a practice as a psychologist.
Sure. So I have known since I was a teenager that I wanted to be a psychologist, or rather at some point in time as a teenager, I decided I wanted to be a psychologist, and then I didn't consider anything else. And was lucky enough, because I really loved it. And I knew I wanted to go into private practice really early on. And in this same post, I wrote it last night, which is why it's top of mind, wrote that The Prince of Tides is Pat Conroy's Prince of Tides is a part of the reason why I'm like, I want to go in private practice. I want to be like Lowenstein and have my really nice office in a big high rise in New York. So I went into private practice and loved it, and found out that I really actually loved the business piece of building a practice. And then, as is true to my nature, when I get to be pretty proficient at something, I start becoming bored with it. And so I circumvented that by specializing in different areas, by doing different things, by enjoying the business piece, and then popped out two children. And somewhere around the end of the first year or second year of life of my second child, realized that I'd achieved everything I'd set out to achieve, and should have been on paper really, really grateful and happy and fulfilled. And I wasn't. And the thought of going to work suffocated me at times.
Wow.
So I had to think really long and hard, and had realized that over time, the discourse I was having had more to do with health on a global scale. So sleep and nutrition and happiness, and not just talking about mental illness and misery. I was very disenchanted with the bureaucratic and administrative model of psychology and therapy. There are a lot of limitations, which I don't like, that come with being a therapist. There are limitations in the type of relationships you have. There are limitations in how you can promote yourself. There's limitations in how far you can work and with whom you can work. And it took me, honestly, about another year and a half to say out loud to anybody that I wanted to go into life coaching. It was really, really hard. I felt like I was betraying like my whole field, like I was throwing away what I had worked towards. And then I got really happy after making the choice to do it. It was really hard, and it's way more work. I think about this on a daily basis. If I could just be content being a psychologist, my therapy practice is full. I turn people away. I'm good at it. I don't need to promote it more than what I'm doing now. I would have so much free time and so much less stress if I could just content myself with being a psychologist.
But obviously that's not enough for you.
No, because unfortunately, although that might be a right choice, it's not the one that's right for me. Again, I need the challenge. I do also really enjoy that conversation about health and thriving, right? When people ask me all the time what the difference is between being a psychologist and being a coach, when I introduce myself and I throw both of those titles out, I'll explain that what psychologists do is take somebody who's functioning below their normal level of functioning. By definition, right, a disorder, if you look at our diagnostic manuals, assumes an impairment in functioning. And we bring them back to their baseline. That's our job. The job is to get you back to where you were before, maybe slightly better. But it's coming from this model where you're assumed to be, for lack of a better word, like damaged or broken, right? You're not working optimally. In coaching, you're taking somebody who technically is doing okay, and you're getting them to this higher level of being where they're thriving, where they're doing great. And you're not looking at somebody as though they're damaged or broken and need to be repaired. You're looking at them as being full of opportunity. And I far prefer that conversation and that discussion.
Yeah, I can totally get that. You know, what's interesting to me, Alessandra, is I know that one of your key concepts is the idea of doing what's right versus doing what's right for you. Mm-hmm. That's something that, you know, all over your website, you're very passionate about that. And I noticed like that is very much your own story.
Yes.
Do you think is that why you're so passionate about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, so first of all, the short answer is yes, that is exactly why I'm very passionate about it. But I don't think my experience is unique. And I think that's part of what comes out. I am part of those people who has always, you know, done the right things, followed the right paths, made sure she, you know, impressed all the authority figures she had to impress. I've always been very responsible. I've held a job since I was 13. I've done all the things that were right. And a lot of times that brought huge amounts of pleasure and pride. And it was great and it was fulfilling. And then there comes a point sometimes where you get caught up in doing what's right. And you stop thinking about whether what's right is actually right for you. Mm-hmm. And then that pride, that pleasure, that advancement or fulfillment that you used to get starts to disappear. And that was very much what was happening with being a therapist. On paper, that was the right thing. I dedicated hours of work, hours of income. I dedicated I mean, I was, you know, graduate school debt and whatever. My parents had made sacrifices. Everything said, stay a psychologist. It was better for my family. My income is far better if I just fill my schedule up entirely with patients. In the short run, it is. In the long run, it will not be. But in the short run, it was much easier. But right isn't always right for you. And I find that the people I like to work with and the people I work with tend to get caught up in that in that dynamic where you ask them, well, what do you want to do? And the answer is, I should do dot, dot, dot. And that should leads them to feel miserable and overwhelmed and or maybe overbooked. I like to use the term overbooked and underwhelmed. So this sense of kind of having too much on their plate and not deriving enough pleasure or fulfillment or joy from whatever they've booked themselves with.
Oh yeah. Amen and hallelujah. That so resonates with my own experience in so many ways. I'm thinking about when I built up a business as a ketubah artist and, you know, when the economy tanked, it was only after sort of driving myself into debt by trying to revitalize, bring my business back to where it had been before the economy tanked, that I finally accepted that it wasn't what I wanted to be doing. But it still took me a long time to let go of that as my primary focus because I spent all those years building it up. I have all those digital assets. I have, you know, all those designs, all the, just all of that stuff, you know? And the same thing, it's interesting. I as a calligrapher, it took me a long time to feel okay about making art that doesn't include letters. And I know other calligraphers who feel the same way. We spend years, you know, building up mastery in this particular skill, and it feels almost like it's a responsibility or something to use that skill rather than setting it aside to do something else. So this concept of like doing what's right versus doing what's right for you, and I don't know, it has so much to do with really embracing your own identity, don't you think?
I do, which for me resonates in another way. I mean, I like the way you put it because I don't think I've thought about it in the terms of identity, but yes, like I'm very big, especially as a psychologist, on assertiveness. And one of the ways I talk about assertiveness is it's all about kind of figuring out who you are and being okay with who you are, which really is at the essence of this notion of doing what's right for you. And the reason I think you probably struggled with it, I struggled with it, is because as adults, we forget that we are continually evolving. You know, we accept that children that throughout childhood and adolescence and even like early 20s, the human being evolves and changes, and there are all these developmental stages. And I don't know why people just get stuck into believing that, well, once you're a grown up, right? And you should know what you want to do, and you're going to want to do the same thing the whole time. And there's no ongoing evolution of personality and of your individuality. And I think that's what gets people, among other things, trapped into this right versus right for you, because they're functioning on what used to be right for them. And now it's entered their psyche as this is right. And they're not paying attention to who they are, and they're not being honest. And they're not being accepting of what their true identity or current identity is.
Absolutely. God, when I started my blog in 2010, my tagline was "Bliss Evolves, Keep Following It."
I like it.
Because I felt, it felt like I had followed my bliss and gotten into this lovely groove, but my bliss went bounding off in another direction. And I kept walking that groove, which then became a rut, you know, it just got so deep and I couldn't even see out of it because it was so deep. So I had to really embrace that idea that our bliss is, which is, you know, the things that we're passionate about, our interests, the things that make us feel alive, those are going to change because we change.
Can I ask you a question, even though you're technically, it's a conversation. So how did you end up making that transition out, like realizing that the bliss had become, well, the groove had become a rut, and having, I talk about it in terms of courage, because I think it takes courage. So having the courage to follow through with what you knew was right for you, instead of sticking with what seemed right at the time.
It's a great question. And my answer is kind of embarrassing in a way, because really the only thing that finally got me out of that rut was when I hit bottom. I had a series of crises, one after another, and my life just felt like it imploded. My business had kind of tanked. I was completely out of money. I was in debt and didn't know where my next mortgage payment was going to come from. And I had several potential clients that I was in conversation with via email and phone, but none of them had actually made a purchase yet. And I made a very bad mistake with one client who was going to buy enough. She was going to buy a ketubah and a Quaker marriage contract, marriage certificate, and invitations. It was going to be more than enough to pay my mortgage. And I was so desperate that I did something really stupid and I lost the sale. And I just lost it. And then maybe a week or two after that, my life partner announced that he was moving out and that he'd signed a lease on an apartment in San Francisco already. And so that relationship was over. He wasn't actually trying to end it, but I ended it. And it's like everything fell apart. And it was only because I was in that like terrible, awful spot of everything, my whole life is upside down, that I was able to kind of take off the blinders and look up to the sky out of that rut. You know, all I saw was the walls of that rut. And I could not even comprehend any other path until I hit bottom. And then, you know, the beautiful thing about hitting bottom, I mean, I would love it if we didn't have to get walloped upside the head by the universe with a 2x4. But the good thing about that is that it really shakes you up enough to, you know, take the blinders off. And I went, oh my God, I don't actually have to do this for the rest of my life. I have choices. And it was that moment that I made the decision, I am going to live the life I really, really want, which I would now call a full color life. I didn't have that terminology back then, but I knew that's what I wanted. And I didn't know exactly what, you know, what that was going to look like, what animal that was going to be. I knew that it was going to evolve. That's the only thing I knew. And I spent the next several months sort of flailing around trying to figure out what that direction is. And I think, don't you think that, well, I think for... So for me, like my process, and I want to get it back to you in just a second, but my process is always I flail, I get traction, I start to find a groove, I'm in this great groove, and that's great. And then eventually it turns into a rut and I get bored. And then I feel, you know, hesitant to let go because it was such a great groove. And eventually I finally do let go of that rut, and then I'm flailing again. And it feels awful. And then I finally get traction and then I find a groove again and repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat. And now I completely lost where I was going with this, but,
we were talking about hitting rock bottom and sinking or swimming, but I don't know if this is where you're going with this, but I think that speaks very much to, what I was talking about earlier about, I am prone to getting bored when I figure something out.
Yeah.
And so then I need to change. It sounds like you do the same thing.
Oh my God, exactly. Absolutely.
It's the creative building puzzle piece that's really exciting.
Yes.
Which is part of what I love actually about the coaching business, because I can't right now foresee that changing. I think it's so much more versatile in allowing somebody to start in a certain place and then evolve with their message, than many other fields. Right. Certainly not like building a widget where when you're, once you've perfected how to build a widget, if you're that type of person who needs a stimulation, you either have to figure out what other widget you can build or, you know, how to revamp your whole system. I think with coaching, you can stay on that same path and change how you approach it. And I think that's what's beautiful about all the coaches that are out there, right? We're all basically saying the same thing. I think we are, at least. And we're all encouraging the same process, which is this process of insight and forward movement, of honesty with oneself, not only in how we think about ourselves, but in how we live and how we speak. I'm actually really very much committed to not only like live true to yourself, but speak true to yourself. Because I think sometimes people will have actions that are true to who they are, but they won't carry forward verbally with that stuff. It's nearly like this hush hush thing. And so I think all of us are saying the same thing. We just approach it all slightly differently, which is good because there are so many people out there and they all have different ways of learning and different things that are going to click for them.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about that language thing you were talking about?
So let me see. So maybe 3 months ago, I wrote a life manifesto. I just said there was a confluence of things happening in my life, and I felt very, very clear about what was important to me and what things were important. I decided I would put it down in a manifesto. And my primary tenet is speak in truth. And I was reading it to my husband, and he goes, "Shouldn't you put that live in truth?" And I said, "Yes, but the reason I'm specifically putting speak in truth is I think there are a lot of people who believe certain things, have certain values, and they're willing to live those out. But if you put them in front of other people at a round table, or you put them on social media, which is an awful place to deal with these things. I love social media. I just think it's an awful place to deal with these things. They won't speak up. They won't say what they really think. They won't portray themselves in a manner that's consistent with what they believe or how they live, right? And so I'm like, for me, the notion of speaking truth was really, really important. That it's important to, when we get back to that notion of accepting who you are, to be able to say to yourself, this is who I am. These are the actions that align with who I am, but also be able to say that out loud to other people. When necessary, not necessarily standing on a soapbox, but just in the right circumstances. So something as simple as this. I really love cheesy movies. I mean, I am like the easiest person to satisfy with a movie, but I know a lot of movie snobs. So it might be tempting when around movie snobs to not admit to the fact that I actually really, speaking of Prince of Tides, I actually really enjoyed the late 1980s, early 1990s rendition of that movie, or Dirty Dancing, or whatever other cheesy movie is out there. And I've just gotten to a point where I'm like, no, I totally will say that in front of my movie snobs, who will then criticize me for being, you know, so easy to please. But I'm like that with music too. I'm like that with a lot of things. And it was about being able to sit there and go, it's okay if I'm different from other people, and it's okay if I like things that other people don't like, and it's okay if I disagree. And all of that is part of being okay with who I am.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for providing those examples. That makes it so, you know, so concrete what you're talking about. And it is interesting how I know in my own life, there have been so many, I could just draw so many examples of when I didn't have the, I don't know what it was, the self-acceptance to be able to be honest in that way.
And it forces you to create a dual identity, right? And, yeah. And that's where I think that notion, it's not just live in truth, as my husband was trying to get me to put down. It is very much speak, because once you speak, it's easy to act, right? Once you publicly admit that you are who you are, that you like what you like, that you're afraid of the things you're afraid of, or that you have whatever insecurities you have, then it's not difficult to live in truth. But it's very easy for people to live dual lives. I'll use another example, but I know people who have been in 10-year relationships with the same-sex partner, right? Living together. So technically they're living in truth, who are still in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's something they won't speak about. Or the person I'm thinking about is a very good childhood friend of mine. And it's like everybody kind of knows it in their family, but nobody talks about it because it's unacceptable to talk about. And that last step of speaking in truth, if she could refer to her wife as her wife instead of just her roommate of 10 years, whom everybody knows as her wife, right?
Right.
Adds that extra step of self-acceptance and then just being true to who you are.
You know, it just makes me think so much about my concept for the past few years. I've been very intentionally and mindfully embracing imperfectionism.
Yes, I remember you mentioning that. I love it.
Yeah. And it took me so long. I mean, it took me into my mid-40s to be able to actually do that. And it's a practice because, of course, I still have the desire and the urge very frequently to do things perfectly or, you know, whatever. But imperfectionism is so much about self-acceptance and self-compassion, and that I've spent a lot of my life living a double life, you know, living, presenting as one thing, but feeling something different on the inside and not always being 100% aware of it either. And that is so damaging. It's such a uncomfortable and unhealthy way to live. And I think it contributes to so many of my personal, you know, health issues and certainly eating disorders. Oh my God. Like, how many years did I hide that from everybody?
Well, it's the implicit message you're not good enough, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, exactly.
If you can't speak about any of it, or if you can't admit to yourself or to others, because it's usually to others, at least in the case of an eating disorder, that you're not perfect or that you can't do it all. It's saying that that's not okay, and that you're not okay.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm very intentional about, you know, being public with things that I feel awkward about or imperfect around. You know, it's a practice to share that stuff rather than hiding it. Because when I can share it, then that is essentially saying to myself and to the world that I'm accepting this.
It's hard. I completely agree with you. And I find myself, you know, it helps to have the manifesto. I totally recommend it to everybody if they can figure out what principles they want to live by, for now at least, to put them down on paper. But it's hard. Like, I find myself doing that with insecurities. It's very easy. The world, since I've been a little girl, has tended to see me as very strong and put together and very confident. And the people who know me the best and know me for the longest time know that, you know, yes, that's there. It's not that that isn't there. That is certainly there. And then there's this other side, which is the person who ruminates and questions and wonders and doesn't know and wants to be liked and will play a conversation or a sentence like 100 times in her head to see, you know, did I interpret correctly all the subtle nuances of tone? And so now I just kind of put that stuff out there. It's easier to just say, yeah, no, I'm actually both, and I can be both. Those don't have to be mutually exclusive characteristics. And the response has never been negative to date.
Yeah, I've experienced the same thing. It's so funny that all the things that I was afraid to share through my teens and 20s and 30s, as I've allowed myself to talk about them as I've gotten older, those are the things that tend to make people bond with me more.
It's, yeah, right? There's this recognition in the other person's soul or mind that part of whatever your story is also part of theirs. And maybe it's a different version or a different canvas, but the storyline's the same.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you something, Alessandra. I want to shift focus a little bit and ask you about how the notion of creativity and creative expression, how does that play out in your life?
That's a big question. That's a good question. I just have to wrap my brain around it. You and I have talked about it a little bit before. For me, first of all, going back to what we were just talking about, perfectionism, it's both fantastic and incredibly scary, the notion of creativity, right? Because you have to, in my mind, produce something that's worthwhile and that's recognized. For me, it's been really important. I mean, starting as a little girl, I used to draw all the time, but I was that kid who would pull out, technique books with drawings of, literally, this is a true story, with a drawing of Da Vinci's sketches of hands. And I'd tell my mom at 10, I want to draw this. And my mother, who did watercolor and painted and taught watercolor when I was really small, was like, no, no, draw a mug. I'm like, no, I'm not going to draw a mug. Mugs suck. Probably didn't use that language, but they were way too simple, right? I have to be able to draw this hand. And I would have these huge meltdowns, but would push myself. So the nice thing with that creativity or that desire to be creative is it forced me to push myself. So there were definitely periods in my life where I would go and draw nudes. I had this whole period where I would just draw nudes, but I'd have to stand in front of the mirror and measure the proportions of my body and try to scale it down to the proportions of something else because I didn't feel like I had the creative vision or mind to come up with something original, which then led me to photography, which was easier, right? Because I don't need to figure out a composition. It's right there in front of me. And then now writing. Actually, it's one of the things I really also love about the shift of becoming a coach is as a psychologist, or as only a psychologist, much of what I wrote was academic. It had to have a serious tone. It had to be mostly devoid of any individual personality. And then getting to write as a coach, I get to mix up those mediums. So some of my posts and friends of mine who are way into just being creative and going with whatever you think, criticize me for this or bemoan me for this. Some of the posts are very kind of didactic and straightforward. And lately I've been trying to let loose and write some other posts, which are just small rants or big rants or points of view without any academic backing to whatever I'm saying, other than this is what I believe. And I love it in the writing process, but it takes me forever. It takes me forever to write.
What do you love about the process?
I'm not sure. I probably around the same period as I was drawing nudes, I was writing short stories and poetry. I actually came across an old book of poems I wrote in high school, which were all so miserable. I mean, not the style of the poem, just the topics, just the subject matter. It was always about misery or being stuck in class. Those seem to have been the two main topics. I like putting my thoughts down. I feel like one of the things that it allows me to do is to take something that's potentially very jumbled up in my head and get it down on paper and sort it out. And when I look at the way I write, that is very much what happens. So I kind of spew stuff on a sheet of paper or on a computer screen at this point. And then I'll go back and I'll edit and edit and edit and edit and pare it down, correct the sentences, correct the structure. And there's a clarity that comes from that whole process of going from what's nearly like, you know, might be the wrong word, but an impressionistic version of a thought to something very clean and structured.
That sounds a lot like my own writing process. I like to say that I think I write in order to figure out what I think.
Yeah. Yes, I think I do the same thing.
Do you still write fiction?
No, but I have a very active mind, so all of that goes on internally. I daydream all the time, and I daydream stories and storylines. So I don't, but I think it's more a question of time and focus. I don't have time with building a business to just sit and write, or rather the time I do have, I choose to spend, in other ways, reading mostly. And so I keep the writing to things I think will be of value to Life in Focus followers. And then every once in a while, we'll just throw in random stuff.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you one more question. What is the idea of living a full color life? What does that mean to you?
Do you mind if I throw terms that I would use for Life in Focus?
Because
I think it's the same thing, right? So when I hear full color life, the first thing that comes to mind for me is thriving. So I have this sense of being self-aware and taking the time at different points in your life to live and be who you are. And to me, that's thriving, right? I mean, the specifics of what that looks like is individual to each person, but globally, that's thriving. And so when I think full color, I have this image of this of a single view in those stripes, right? And each stripe is a different color. And so although it's a single person, you just have these different representations of an individual, and it all fits together. And that's what I think about when I think about living life in full color. I just have this sense of somebody who takes the time as they're evolving to get to know who they are and to express that in everything they do.
I love that. That's really a beautiful image, and yeah, very cool. Well, thank you, Alessandra. It's been really fun talking to you and getting your perspective on all this stuff. Thank you for taking the time.
I've enjoyed it. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. That's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. If you're getting value out of this podcast, I would so love it if you would tell your friends and hop on over to iTunes. I would so appreciate it if you would leave a rating and review. And here is how to do that on a mobile device. If you are on a smartphone or a tablet, it is super easy. Just launch your podcast app. If you're listening on your iPhone or your tablet, you are presumably already in your podcast app. Tap the search button at the bottom and enter Live Creative Now and tap that search button. And you will see Live Creative Now, see that cover art. Tap on the cover art for Live Creative Now. And then tap the reviews button, which should show up. And you will see a bunch of reviews. And somewhere in the screen, you'll see the words write a review. Click on that. Tap on write a review. And it will probably ask you to sign in to enter your iTunes password. Enter your iTunes password to log in. And once you're logged in, tap the stars to leave a rating. Of course, you know, I hope you leave a 5-star rating. I would be
super grateful if you would. And then type in your title for your review and your review content. It doesn't have to be long. A few words is just fine. And then tap send. And that is it. It is so easy. That's all there is to it. If you leave a review, I might just read it out on one of the next podcasts. And you will earn my undying gratitude. If you would like to read those instructions, if you are a visual learner, you can find them at livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review. That's livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review. And you would totally make my day again by leaving a new review. It's been a while since somebody's left a new one, so you would really stand out and I would be totally grateful. Anyway, that's it. Until next time, thanks again for joining me and go get creative.
Live creative now. Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.